just how dramatic of a shift is this from recent years?
Look, we've seen a massive decline in net overseas migration since COVID hit Australia in March. We've had net overseas migration in the past close to 300,000, and now the budget predicts net overseas migration will drop to negative 72,000 over the next financial year.
Net migration, what does that actually encapsulate?
Basically, it's the number of people who enter Australia who are staying for at least 12 out of 16 months, minus Australians and residents who exit. So it doesn't include tourists, but it could include, for instance, an international student. And I would say that the drop in international student migration is a big part of the reason we're seeing such a big drop in net overseas migration right now.
Is COVID the main culprit to be pointing the finger at here?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the government did reduce the permanent residency levels a little bit last budget, so that could have contributed a small amount, but COVID does seem to be driving this reduction in net overseas migration predominantly.
And I would imagine we're not sort of alone in that in terms of countries that rely on migration to a certain extent in order to maintain or grow their population levels.
It's true, but Australia did have one of the highest rates of population growth in Western democratic countries before COVID. So it's going to affect Australia disproportionately. So we just had simply higher rates of migration. So the drop for us is more dramatic than other countries.
As we mentioned, the federal budget was handed down on Tuesday night, and the coalition government looking towards an economic recovery following COVID-19. Just what are the impacts we will see coming out of this return to negative levels for net migration and this very low population growth occurring in Australia right now? What are the sort of impacts on economic recovery?
The budget last year made clear that high population growth was a big part of the reason that the government was able to reach a surplus. That's clear from the appendices to the budget. And so now that we have much lower population growth by virtue of the cuts in migration and a reduction in fertility, that will affect all aspects of the budget, whether that be GDP, levels of consumption, number of people of working age who are paying taxes and not seeking social security and health costs. So it will have a considerable effect on the budget and the capacity to get back into surplus.
Did we see these kind of numbers? As we say, this has dropped after the federal budget itself was released. Did we see these kind of numbers taken into account in the budget projections?
The budget comes up with two different scenarios. And one is based on a quick discovery of a vaccine and a return to migration. And one is based on a more extenuated crisis. And so, yes, I think they do model those two effects. But there are some assumptions. For instance, a clear assumption is that a vaccine could be found midway through next year, and that will in turn affect migration. And that might not be what occurs at all.
If we're looking to return to, well, a positive net migration and a little bit more stability in terms of the overall population numbers, are we just relying on a vaccine? When might we see these kind of things, if we don't see a vaccine come through?
Look, I don't think there's been enough discussion of migration corridors, at least not in the public arena. So why can't we bring migrants in and quarantine them, especially if the migrants are willing to pay for that quarantining? I don't understand why we're not pursuing this more fulsomely when we know how central migration is to our economic settings. If we could find a way to bring migrants in safely and place conditions on their visas that require them to stay for a certain period of time to reduce the disturbance to government of their exit and entry, I don't see why it's not possible to restart migration a bit earlier in a scaled fashion. And they're talking about very small pilots of international students later this year, but I don't understand why we couldn't do something a bit larger than that.
And the main solution I seem to have heard from the government on myself is just have some kids. If you're thinking about having some babies, start popping them out. Is there any other solutions, though, that perhaps you feel are being overlooked at the moment?
Well, fertility is down in part because people don't like to have children during a time of economic decline. And I think a lot of women are feeling unsupported during COVID with childcare crises and the like. So I don't think fertility is really going to be the main part of the solution here. We know that the vast bulk of population growth was driven by migration previously. So fertility and migration are the main ways that you affect the population and also aging. And thankfully, we haven't had a large number of deaths during COVID. So aging is obviously not a possible policy parameter. So you've got, that leaves you with immigration and fertility. And of course, making the existing population more productive, which I guess some of the budget measures were intended to address that. But we still do have really a crisis around childcare, which I think is coming through with budget analysis, that hasn't been addressed sufficiently. So they're really the drivers you have. The government doesn't have endless drivers in this regard.
Until we figure out cloning technology, I think those are probably the only factors we do have. Anna, thank you very much. Do appreciate you coming on the show.
No worries. Have a nice day. Thank you. Goodbye.